Juno Afternoon is made possible with support from Sentinel Coffee, serving Southeast with locally roasted organic coffee and door-to-door delivery. More at sentinelcoffee.com. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm your host today, Scott Burton. And in the studio with me now is Bob Schroeder. Bob, are you one of the co-chairs of 350 Juno?
No, I managed to avoid being co-chair. The co-chairs are Elaine Schroeder and Doug Whidbey. Thank you so much for all your hard work. I am on the steering committee of 350 Juno, and as you probably gather, I'm just looking at the guests you have today and other things going in town. This is kind of like Climate Week Juno.
I know, right?
And so I'm really jazzed about all the things that are going on right now.
And climate journalist Dr. Daniel Grossman is on his way right now, so hopefully we'll get to talk to him here in a few minutes.
He's on his way. He is also looking in on the Tongass National Forest, and who knows, he may be doing some writing about that.
Okay. And he's speaking tonight at 7 p.m. at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. Is that right?
That is correct. And we're real excited to get Dan because I think he has a real interesting take on the climate situation, in that what he does is he travels around the world and does topical stories on climate situations in different countries. And Elaine and I have just had a fascinating few days with him. He's been staying over at our house. And in the course of conversation, I hear about the Amazon. I hear about the Arctic. I hear about the Congo. And, who knows where else.
Okay. I think a lot of our listeners know what 350 Juno is by this point, but can you give us just the quick synopsis?
Sure. We should start out with where does the 350 come from?
I mean,
you know, should it be 365 or 360 or what? 360, that's KTOO. 350 refers to the parts per million of carbon dioxide that you can have in the atmosphere and still have something of a live, living planet and a healthy civilization. 350 parts per million would equate to approximately a temperature increase of 1.5 degrees centigrade or 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's about all we can take and still have our lattes and have a normal world. Right at this moment, we're probably at 410 or 415. And the best measurements of that are taken at the observatory on the top of Mauna Kea, or is it Mauna Loa? I always mix up which one it is.
Got it. How many of you are there in Juno, would you say?
How many people
involved
who
are?
Well, what we have in Juno, our setup is we have a very active steering committee of about 10 people, and then we have people who come in and do things with us. Our mailing list is about 500 folks. And, of course, there's a lot of overlap. We're really lucky in Juno on a per capita basis. We got pretty many people who are very concerned about the climate emergency. So we have our sister groups, Renewable Juno, which concentrates on sustainability, and Interfaith Power and Light, who are coming on a little bit later in your show today, I think.
That's right. So again, 7 p.m. tonight is Dr. Daniel Grossman, and then you're organizing a rally tomorrow. Is that right?
That's correct. This is a two-day event, and tomorrow our rally is Stand Up for Climate. And the idea is, you know, when you talk to people, probably many of your listeners have this feeling as well. Basically, most people are most citizens are pretty much on the same page. We see pictures of hurricanes, of forest fires, of flooding, of serious drought in many parts of the world in our country. And, you know, you kind of look at each other and you say, gosh, I'd be willing to do something if I could help out. I'd take some blows to stop runaway climate change. However, we have a political structure that's completely in the hands of the fossil fuel companies. So what we're saying at what we'll be saying at our rally is, hey, it's time for action.
Got it. And elaborate on that a little bit. What do you want the fossil fuel companies and like sovereign wealth funds to be doing?
Well, our 350 Juno's main campaign is to call on the Permanent Fund of the Alaska's Permanent Fund Corporation to divest from fossil fuel holdings. And we do that from two points. Obviously, we're climate activists. So we believe that these culpable criminal companies should take it in the shorts for their actions of disinforming the American public and the world public, and for continuing to oppose even minor measures that would address some things of climate change. The minor measures would be things like the carbon tax, which was defeated in Washington state because the fossil fuel companies, the consortium, put in a vast amount of funding of disinformation, saying that basically the sky would fall in if you had to pay a little bit for carbon in Washington state. So our deal is that what we need is government action, and we need to curtail the power of the fossil fuel companies to call the shots on climate. We also, it's not 350 Juno's mission, but we completely support individual efforts at using renewables, at cutting down our own carbon footprints, and maybe flying a little bit more, which is probably the big thing for Juno, our residents.
What do you mean by flying a little bit more?
Well, let's see. I just bought an electric vehicle yesterday, so I'm a pretty holy guy today. You probably noticed when I walked in, you know, like I'm kind of glowing from that. However, all the oil that I save on driving an electric vehicle or turning my thermostat down, that goes up in a whiff of smoke when I get on a plane and go to Seattle or Chicago or Miami. So, I'm as guilty as the next person there. But, that's on the horizon for personal changes that all of us will need to make.
Got it. If you're just tuning in, that's the voice of Bob. Hi, and Dan Grossman, Dr. Daniel Grossman just showed up. But that's the voice of Bob Schroeder. He's with 350 Juno. And we are previewing Dr. Daniel Grossman's talk tonight at 7 p.m. at the Juno Arts and Culture Center, and also the climate rally tomorrow at noon on the Capitol steps. Dr. Daniel Grossman, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry I'm late.
It's nice to have you here. Will you catch your breath? Bob, tell us about how you found Daniel Grossman.
Well, 350 Juno, what our mission in Juno is to really get people galvanized around the climate emergency. And so we were thinking, well, what kind of speaker would be good for this? And we brought in other speakers at different times. And so then we decided to sponsor Dan because he has a much more global perspective. We've got quite a few people in our community and in Alaska who know what's going on here. We know about the ice melting. We know about our unseasonable warm weather. We know about how salmon can't swim and spawn in hot water. But, boy, we don't know exactly what's going on in the Amazon or the Congo or other places. And I really like the idea of having somebody who is an eyewitness reporter.
All right. Daniel Grossman, you're an award-winning print journalist and radio and web producer with 20 years of experience, a PhD in political science, and a Bachelor of Science in Physics, both from MIT. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
It's nice to have you here. What are some of your first impressions of the Tongass life in Southeast Alaska?
Well, I guess you've been having a drought here, so I was sort of expecting a little bit more rain. Of course, it's very nice. Been very nice and cool for me compared to Boston, where I'm from. I know that having dry, sunny weather is not always what you want in a rainforest.
Well, it's nice to have you in town. You're speaking 7 p.m. tonight at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. I found a cut of yours where you are climbing up the Amazon Tall Tower Observatory.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You mind if I play that for our listeners so we can just sort of hear you in the field?
Well, yeah, me huffing and puffing, you mean?
let's take a listen to this, and we'll be right back with Dr. Daniel Grossman.
About the world's largest rainforest, home to more species of plants and animals than anywhere else on Earth. Most of their research takes place on the ground, but sometimes they get lost in the clouds. Daniel Grossman has this reporter's notebook.
Okay, let's see. I got my harness on. Okay, I'm at the base of the tower. I'm just going to go right up. It's dawn in the heart of the Amazon. rising straight up into the jungle canopy and disappearing into the darkness in front of me are the struts of a giant structure called the Amazon Tall Tower Observatory, or ATO. I'm strapped into a bulky harness. If I stumble on ATO's slick steps, a safety system I'm clipped to will keep me from slipping through the latticework and falling to the ground. At least that's the idea.
So this tower is the tallest human-made structure in all of South America. It's 321 meters tall by a little over 1,000 feet, taller than the Eiffel Tower. Seven steps from one landing to the next, and then the staircase turns. One, two, three, four, five.
Biologist Carlos Casado, one of the scientists overseeing ATO, says a key question is whether global warming will cut back rainfall here and dry out the forest. Finding the answer requires understanding how the jungle's trees help to create clouds.
And the whole idea of the project is try to understand how gases emitted by the forest, from the soil, from the plants, how they connect with the atmospheric chemistry to create clouds, to produce rain.
To study the cloud-making machinery, researchers need samples of air with the chemical signature of the entire forest. They can't get those near the ground, where the canopy...
All right, Dan, that's you in action. You were huffing and puffing.
I was. I was about almost a quarter of a mile up. A lot of people say that they can't imagine climbing that tower. I actually... For that particular story, I had to climb it twice because the first time the recording didn't come out the way I liked it, and so I went up the next day. It's a lot of work, but if you believe that the steel is going to hold you up, then you just don't think about how high you are in the air.
Got it. A lot of us here in Alaska think of Alaska as a place to be studying climate change. The Amazon is too. Where is Alaska on your radar for things changing?
Well, I have to say that for the last several years, actually, well, I was very interested in the impact of climate change on ice for a long time, and I reported on that. I like to change my focus of activity every few years, and so for the last few years, I've actually been focusing on tropical areas, and I've been to the Amazon a couple of times. I've been to Tanzania, the Democratic Republic of Congo. I just came back from the Democratic Republic of Congo with a case of parasites that successfully treated. Alaska, of course, is in terms of climate change research. ICE is an important one, and journalists like ICE, partly because ICE you can see, and we can see how fast the glaciers are receding, and we can also see how fast the change is occurring in the Arctic sea ice. I'm sure your listeners know quite a bit about the Arctic sea ice because you're up here, but the decline in the Arctic sea ice is absolutely outrageous. There's been a 40% decline in the last 40 years since satellites have been able to measure it. So, of course, those are the most obvious things that going on in Alaska, but there are other things as well, like changes in temperature. It's a little bit harder to see what small changes in temperature do. Of course, there's the melting of permafrost and things like that.
All right. You'll be speaking tonight at 7 p.m. at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. Let's see. It looks like the title is Climate Crisis in the Heat of the Moment. Does that sound about right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's more or less, I think, what they call it.
What do you hope to share tonight?
Well, I think a lot of people... I mean, everybody's heard about climate change. I don't think there's anybody that doesn't know that global warming is taking place and that climate change or climate crisis, as some people like to call it, is taking place. I think that what I'd like to do is to give people a sense of just how serious this is. I mean, everybody I know, nobody in my circle is a climate denier. Nobody in my circle thinks that nothing's happening. And I think it'd be hard to be an educated person and deny that there's something going on. But not that many people actually in my own circle, in my my friends and my relatives who've known what I've been doing for 20 years or so actually feel in their bones that we're actually in serious danger and we need to do something very quickly. I mean, the researchers are telling us is that we've got to turn around this fossil fuel system that we've gotten involved in almost immediately. We have to stop increasing every year the amount of fossil fuel we're using. So I think that's one of the things, a main thing I want to communicate to people is just how serious this is and how, despite how difficult it will be to do something about it, that it's just super important. And I think that if I can convince a few people of that aren't convinced yet, then I've done something good in helping us to get on our way.
Got it. And what might be some of your advice to our listeners out there? I mean, Bob just bought an electric car yesterday or last week. We're putting in LED light bulbs. We're trying to do what we can. What's your advice?
Well, I the way I like to think of it, there's three different dimensions on which you can think about what you can do. There's, you can change your technology, you can change your behavior, and you can do something in the policy or political realm. On the technology, of course, there's all different ways that you could improve the technology, let's say, of your daily life. Up here in Alaska, I don't imagine that solar panels are economic. In Boston, they are actually. A lot of people are putting solar panels on their houses. You could put in a more efficient heating system in, though. That would be one thing you could do. You could get an electric car. On the behavior, there are lots of things you can do. You could take public transportation rather than taking and driving, or you could walk rather than driving for like a short trip to the post office or to the grocery store or something like that. If you're just buying a few things, you could go by bicycle. I recently bought an electric bicycle in Boston. And it's terrific because it's electric assist, so it means that the hills aren't quite as difficult, the headwinds aren't quite as much of a problem, and so I just feel a little bit motivated to take the bicycle rather than the car. And then on the political side, ultimately, government is going to have to play an important role in this because government affects so many things. For instance, the energy efficiency of products like light bulbs. The Trump administration wants to change this policy that would phase out incandescent light bulbs and make it so that everybody would be using these much better and economically better LED bulbs. That they're trying to change a policy that was already in place to phase out the incandescent bulbs. There are all sorts of other things: the fuel efficiency of cars, which kinds of power plants are being used, whether or not there are. I mean, those are on a national level, but on a local level, like having bike lanes to make cities here or anywhere else in the country more friendly for riding bicycles, and therefore people feel like they want to do that. So there's – I think that things need to happen on all different levels, and certainly on the political level. Even if you're already turning down your thermostat to a lower temperature, let's say 64 at night when you're sleeping, you still might want to get involved politically and try to push leaders – to take this problem more seriously.
If you're just tuning in, that's the voice of Dan Grossman, Dr. Dan Grossman. He's speaking tonight, 7 p.m. at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. It's been organized by 350 Juno. Bob Schroeder is also here in the studio with me. Somewhere in your description, Dan, I saw he's good at getting under people's skins. you know, thinking of your capacity as a journalist and sort of getting us to understand where we are with climate change, is that sort of a priority of yours, conveying this message?
Well, I don't think I really want. I don't know where that came from. I don't want to get under anybody's skin. I mean, occasionally I'll be talking to someone who would rather not speak to me about a subject, and maybe I get under their skin a little bit. But I think that, I mean, maybe my message isn't something that everybody wants to hear. And the climate change, I mean, I think I bring this message to people rather gently, to tell the truth. Most of what I'm doing is going out with scientists and seeing what they're doing. A lot of people think that the science of climate change is there climate change or isn't there climate change? Well, that's – the scientists have answered that a long time ago. But there's a lot of really cool stuff that's continuing to happen. What's the effect on birds in the Amazon? Peatlands in the Democratic Republic of Congo change over time? What kind of agriculture could you grow on peatlands that would have a that would not affect the amount of carbon that's released from them? There are all these interesting scientific questions, and so I'm trying to tell stories about this research in a way I think that people would find engaging. The same way that story that you played at the beginning of this interview of me going up this tower, the tower is a climate research station. They're trying to understand how clouds are formed above the Amazon and how that affects rain clouds affect the forest. That's some interesting science. But I, you might say, this is a secret, don't tell anybody this, I dressed up the science in as part of a little micro adventure. The adventure was me climbing about a quarter of a mile up in the air in this tower that's as high as the Empire State Building. And I, you know, I huffed and puffed. I mean, it really was a hard work. I might have given a few extra huffs and puffs just to add to the drama. But the point was, I didn't want to get under people's skin. I actually wanted to. I wanted people to listen to the end of the story, and that's always my goal, is to educate by entertaining.
Got it. Thinking of back to Alaska here for a minute, if I may. Thinking of my fellow journalists listening to the show right now, what might be a story that you'd like to hear come out of Alaska in the near future? What are you interested in again now that you're back?
Another story that other journalists should be telling about Alaska. Well, I think that certainly the right now a very hot topic is the roadless rule, and I'm going to be doing some reporting on the roadless rule in the Tongass. And I think that the issue of carbon sequestration of the forest is really interesting, like how much carbon is stored in the forest, how that might change with logging. It's not a simple question, actually. There's some very interesting scientific issues. You cut the forest down. You cut down these big trees. You got little trees taking their place if it's reforested. How do those little trees compare with the big trees? And then what happens to the soil, which also contains a lot of carbon? So there's all sorts of interesting questions there. I think that there are all sorts of interesting questions about the glacier recession and how that affects the wildlife. I mean, the glaciers in Alaska are going amazingly fast, and that's there's a question of how this is going to affect tourism, but it also affects many, many other things. So there's an infinite number of stories that that journalists could be pursuing. And you know, I think that as a profession, we've had a bit of a lack of imagination about how to keep this in the public eye. And I certainly think that it's important for other journalists to keep on thinking, like, how can I have another story about climate change without people saying, didn't we hear about climate change yesterday?
Okay. Bob, can you give us the details on tonight? Is there a cost? Things like that.
Well, tonight we'll have a basket at the door to defray some of the cost incurred by 350 Juno and bringing our illustrious guest to Juneau. And we welcome the community to show up and also to show up at our rally tomorrow on the Capitol steps and demand action. So I think Dan's talk will be particularly interesting and informative. 350 Juno basically believes we've run out of time, so we really need action. And attitudes are really good, talk is really good, but we need political action on these issues. Thanks so much, Scott.
All right, 7 p.m. tonight at the Juno Arts and Culture Center, donations accepted, and noontime tomorrow on the Capitol steps. Dr. Daniel Grossman, thank you for your time. Bob Schroeder, thank you so much.
Well, it was great joining you. Stand it, my shrivel up and blow.